This is the Development Locker podcast, and this is your weekly investment in your development as you continue your transition through life and academy football. In season three, we bring you even more episodes, more guests who you can connect with, and even more insight into individuals like you who have a similar experiences in pursuing a career in the professional game. Over the next 11 months and 48 episodes, we aim to cover the key topics you will face along your journey. From the challenges you will have to overcome, the ups, the downs, and many experiences along the way. We will be here every week to discuss the current issues in your lives, support you in your journey, and continue your development to being the best version of you. In your interviews from the locker. Jack is a unique individual, someone who made the brave and bold decision to leave the football world behind in order to pursue other passions. And by other passions, I mean continuing to support athletes in their development, regardless of sport, level, or gender. What he has created with his sports-wide consultancy is truly amazing and will change young people's lives. With a range of services, strategies, and specifically designed programs, Jack is aiming to change the landscape of how athletes can walk the long, winding road towards becoming the best version of themselves. Over the next 60 minutes, we talk about privilege, accountability, ownership, goal setting, and much, much more. I'm conscious I don't want to give too much away or steal Jack's thunder, as he can tell you much better than I can about his hopes and dreams, his aspirations for the future, and the vision of how Sportswide Consultancy is the game changer you've been searching for. So here he is, talking to us, giving back to you in this week's interview from the locker. Welcome one and all to another episode of the podcast, and you might be getting a theme of something a little bit different, and today's guest is certainly going to be that. But before we get into how he's different, which I'm sure he will tell us, Jack, I want to ask you the first question. If you've not already listened to the multitude of episodes, we start with a why. So your why question is going to be, why did you decide to leave a dream job in football? And I say that because there's many who from outside the football world see it as, oh, it's a dream, it's a no-brainer. But you decided to leave what could be perceived as a dream job to create your own platform, your own consultancy. Tell us why.
I think the word that kind of sums it up is curiosity. So I've always been someone that has wanted to explore what the sports world has to offer. And I think for me, I got to a stage in my career where, although, you know, I have a huge amount of respect and love the people still that are at my previous employer, I had an amazing 12 years in one organisation. And when you work in sport, that's a long time to have your roots in one place. And I've always had that itch to go and explore what else is kind of out there. And I think I got to a position in life personally and also professionally where I felt that I had some skill sets and some experiences and alongside an educational background where I just felt that there was something else that I could offer the sports world. It was something that I felt that I had a bigger part to play, which could be explored wider than working in a single organisation and hopefully trying to provide some alternative opinion and support across the sports group.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, it's in terms of the dream job, was it a dream job? Did it not live up to the expectations in terms of before you got into it to when you were in it to that contrast to now you're out of that kind of football world, as it were?
Yeah. So, I mean, growing up, a lot of people that work in football think that, you know, playing as being a footballer or being a high level coach was going to be the journey that they are kind of going to go on. And I think originally that's where I set off. You know, when I was a 16, 17, 18 year old where I was playing, but kind of had a really strong understanding that probably wasn't going to be a career for me. I knew that I wanted that career in football. And for me, I thought that was going to be the coaching route. But throughout my career, I've been given opportunity to explore avenues which at the time didn't really knew existed or didn't have a great understanding of it. And then kind of built myself into this kind of off-field operations with the roles I've done within my career. So I don't suppose I've ever looked at it. I've always recognised how privileged I am to work in football, in professional football. But I don't think I ever looked at it as it being my dream profession or my dream role, like the question that you asked, because I almost evolved into this role. It was an amalgamation of me being successful in other previous areas of football operations that meant that I could create a role as head of football and performance, which I don't think you get that job title at many other clubs, merging the two. But it meant that I was able to create opportunity for myself, not necessarily identified the role as the dream role to be within, although always recognising how privileged, you know, the few are that get to operate at senior levels within sport in general.
Yeah, I suppose it's all around that kind of key word, perception, is it, about what others perceive to be a dream role. What you're saying is, you know, it's probably not a total opposite, but saying, you know, you're privileged, we all are privileged to be working in academy football and the football world, the wider world. So, yeah, it's interesting, that one. And you mentioned kind of key word before there is opportunity. And I suppose you've created your opportunity with the consultancy business, which we'll go on to in a minute. But what do you aim to achieve with this venture that you've set up in terms of sports-wide consultancy? What's the, I don't want to use the word dream again because I've already used that one, but what's the outcome? What's the mission? What's the vision of yours in terms of, without sounding too business-like, but, you know, what's the scenario that you see playing out forward where you think, yeah, I've really accomplished something and I've really offered something different to the football world or the sports world?
Yeah, so I mean, that was the key word there, sport. So I've grown up with sport being a huge influence on my life. You know, love football, love my cricket, love my rugby. So for me to have the opportunity to work across and engage with a greater network, which you know how it is, Lee, politics within football are sometimes very difficult things to navigate and very difficult at times to be able to open up and explore the greater world of sport. So for me, you know, SportsWide was built to engage within the professional sports sector, in particular across elevating environments, high performance environments, which create opportunity for others to elevate the learning and the potential of success within these clubs and organisations. So that might be from youth development and footballers being given greater enriched experiences on their journey. Or it might be something that's a lot more specific and specialised around boardroom structures and engagement and how leadership is affecting the direction of an organisation. And I've always been aware that if you can only gauge success by winning and losing at the end of the day, then there are a hell of a lot more losers than there are winners. And I'm a great believer that, you know, in sport and even at the top end of professional sport, winning can be how you operate, how you behave, how you champion others internally and externally. Which I think the evidence is out there that if you can see evidence of that, then the chances are you can also be successful on the football pitch or sports field. So to be able to play a part in that third party, almost being distant from being the employee within that organisation, allows me to see things through a different lens, which may be, and I know speaking firsthand, you can be clouded by decisions that you make when you're living and breathing something that you see 5, 6, 7 days a week. So the opportunity to be able to say, hey, have you thought about this? Or it's interesting, I've seen this. I can kind of look at it from a different way. I think what's important about SportsWide as well, though, is that the community means a lot to me. The sports community, the grassroots community is vitally important in my journey. So it isn't just about the engagement that SportsWide does within professional sport, but also within the grassroots and community sector. So, you know, I've waffled there a little bit, but your question in terms of what's success like for SportsWide? Well, the success for SportsWide is being able to say that we're supporting the grassroots community all the way through to, you know, professional sports organisation boardrooms and providing a service which is bespoke to the needs of the audience that we're engaging with.
Yeah, it's a total shift, isn't it, in thought process. What's up there? You know, if success is all about, and it's a big if, winning and losing. And yeah, most of us are losers, aren't we? Yeah, because yeah, you think in any sport, there's very few trophies, very few leaderboards to be topped. So wow, yeah, that's a bit of a culture shift, that one. But we'll park that and we'll try and stay focused. And the focus I want to kind of bring onto, and specifically for our listeners, you know, academy players, young professionals, in terms of, you offer many different services, a wide range of services within that sportswide consultancy. One of them is mentoring. I'm very much of that kind of thinking of, well, of, you know, I think everyone should have a mentor, a, you know, executive coach, role model, call them what you will. What is mentoring to you? Because a lot of people use those terms interchangeably, use them without really knowing what it is. And what do you believe it can offer as a benefit to academy players and young professionals in football?
Yeah, we absolutely have the same thoughts on mentoring, Lee, in terms of everyone should have it. It's part of their arsenal, it's part of their personal development. For me, mentoring is having a safe environment where you can test out the water on things that, you know, your thoughts and your feelings, with knowing that you're going to get a really integral, honest response that enables you to grow with that, to be able to have healthy conversations with individuals or groups of people that recognize and can provide empathy and alignment to the journey that you're going on, but also can tell you when you're not necessarily barking up the right tree, and being able to be quite critical at times, but it comes from a safe space, because that, you know, that individual is invested and has interest in your own development as well. Some of the best mentors that I've had haven't necessarily been within the sports industry, but can still align the challenges that are common to both industries. So there's empathy that can be provided. There's a realization of the situation that you find yourself in, but also someone that has got the experience to be able to kind of guide you through your journey. You know, I have a mentor that I reach out to once a month, officially sitting down over a coffee and just, you know, chewing the fat that month, what the struggles that have come up, the challenges that have come up, the future ideas that may have popped up into my head. Being able to kind of future plan with your mentor, I think, is a really vital component as well, because usually these people, if you pick a good one, are going to have an idea around the type of journey that you're going to go on, and will have some stories and will have some feedback on things that maybe they've done themselves, which provides some really strong learning opportunities up front, so you may not make those same mistakes. So I think for if we're linking this back to young academy footballers across sport in general, being able to have an individual who understands the journey you're about to go on, and is able to keep your feet grounded, is being able to be able to challenge and almost poke the bear when needed, I think is a really important part of your learning journey.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, we're both on the same page on that one, aren't we, in terms of mentoring. And it's, yeah, it's, I'm not even going to say it's growing, because it should be there. It is there, but I don't feel enough people tap into it, or maybe give it the respect it deserves. I think people, similar to psychology in football, a lot of people would be dismissive of it without even actually trying it and seeing. And like you said, it's a safe space. If that first session with your mentor, it may be the wrong mentor you're with, that's a different question. But if you really don't like it, you really don't feel you're getting anything out of it, then don't repeat it. It's pretty as simple as that. But I would pretty much guarantee that wouldn't be the case. But yeah, that's...
I also think, Lee, sorry to jump in.
That's all right.
It's a very personal thing, you know, mentoring. Yeah. Whether you're a mentee or a mentor, it's a personal thing. So for some people, just the idea of that is quite a scary thought. And there are, you know, I know plenty of people that can go through life and through a career who don't have that official individual or few people. Because I'm a big believer that if you are really going to throw yourself into finding yourself a mentee, have a couple, have a few, that you can have a diverse range of opinion which I think is really healthy as well. But it's a personal choice. And I think when you're at a stage of life when you recognize mentoring can support you, I think it falls hand in hand with a bit of maturity too. I think, you know, if you asked Jack Sharp at 20, 21, do you fancy reaching out to someone that's going to tell you how things are going to go? You know, probably the chip on my shoulder said, nah, I'm all right. I'm going to do it myself. So I think there's, you know, there's an element of living a bit of life and recognizing that it's a process that is enabling you to grow, but you need to find your own way to it. I think those that are pushed into it and saying you have to go find a mentor doesn't necessarily see the great benefits to it. So I think it's something you have to be comfortable with yourself. And to begin with, you have to put the effort in and the work in to go and find what works for you. I think that's quite an important part to it.
Yeah, and the personal aspect of it, and I think level of maturity, a lot of the time that comes with age. I'm of that age of, I did it as part of my recent studies, and it was just massively beneficial. Like you said, it wasn't even, when you go into it, you're thinking, oh God, it's going to be, you know, somebody who's opinionated, or it's going to be this. You have preconceived ideas, but strip it back. It's two people going for a coffee and offloading, talking about sharing problems and experiences. And they might not even have a, you know, that's the way you said about your selection of, oh, well, it could be a case of whereby you need to might try two or three, because you might want a sport related one. You might want somebody who's totally nothing to do with sport to give you that different lens on how things work. And yeah, I'm an advocate of it and for it. And I think there needs to be a lot more of it in sport, in football. But I'll get off my box for now and carry on through the questions. And
well, I just think quickly on that, Lee, as well. I don't think that, you know, it's easy to also fall in the trap that mentoring is this, always has to be this one-to-one interaction. Yeah. I actually think that, you know, individuals who put themselves out there to attend, you know, workshops and events, small group stuff, discussion work, sometimes this unofficial mentoring tag where you're placing yourself in an environment of individuals who have come together over maybe a common challenge or over a common theme that are learning and enriching themselves. I think learning and investment in yourself and understanding of what you're trying to achieve in your role goes very closely alongside mentoring in itself. And so again, I think that the greatest benefits I had is that with that development growth mindset, when you're investing in your own learning and your official, unofficial education, I then think mentoring sits alongside that beautifully in terms of that journey that an individual goes on. I think they work hand in hand. If you have that open mindset to invest in yourself, you will look for other areas that enable you to grow.
Perfect. I think that growth is where you take me now into my next question, and not directly, but in terms of accountability, I feel that's totally related with growth. And it's a two-pronged question, but I'm going to try and separate the two. And the first one's probably quite a short, sharp, shocking question. And do you feel, with your experience in football, that we have an accountability issue? And what I mean by that is, do you feel that players, staff, and staff is a very big, lot of subgroups underneath that title, but players and staff, do you feel that there's accountability issue where people shirk responsibility? There's this kind of like blame culture from the outside world on academy football and football as a business entity and all the different problems that are coming, you know, the Super League and all the rest of it. Do you feel more towards the academy side of things that, you know, there's an accountability issue in football? Let's take the players themselves first, and we'll go on to staff in a bit, but do you think there's an accountability issue within football in that's stopping their growth?
I mean, so first and foremost, you know, I've got some quite set views on accountability and responsibility, because and I think this will probably mould my answer to the question. I'm a great believer that first and foremost, you have to look at yourself in the mirror. I've always been someone that has been very uncomfortable allowing someone else to dictate your destiny and your fate and the outcome associated to you. So I always believe whether it's positive, because when we talk about accountability, we always seem to put a negative connotation to it, holding your hand up when something's gone wrong. But for me, you know, the true definition of being accountable is recognizing, yes, you've got to do that. And you've got to look at yourself in the mirror first and say, could I have done more? What could I have done more? I won't allow myself to be in this position next time. And if I am, I put my hands up again and I learn. But also, it's also recognizing that when you do that side of it, you should be in a position where when things go well, you put your hand up and say, hey, look, this is also what I've done. You know, this is where we are because of this. So coming back to your question in terms of directly linking it into football and into academy, I think there is very much an undertone of when things don't necessarily come out the way that you think they're going to do, it is easy to look around the room and point fingers. And when it comes to things like accountability, it is a trait, and I actually think it's something that you can mold and you can grow in yourself. It's your outlook on things, isn't it? Do you allow yourself to be a victim, or do you do something around it and see how you can use good or bad news to elevate future opportunity? In my experience in working in high performance, those which are able to say, hey, look, I don't like this desired outcome, I could quite easily look to blame A, B, and C, and D, but ultimately I'm looking within myself and recognize, hey, I could have done that a bit better, I could have done this a bit more. Those people bounce back brilliantly from perceived failure. And I think if you have that bounce back ability, and let's link it to being an academy footballer, because we know there are more young people who will come through an academy and not get the desired outcome of being a scholar or a professional, that look at that and you could say, oh, what have I given up 9-10 years of my life? But if you frame it differently and say, hey, look, ultimately, I had a period of time to prove that I could be of a level to perform at whatever level you are in your football club, that's not come off. However, I accept that. That's on me. I've been given all the tools. But look at the experiences that I've had. Look at the education I've been provided. How can I now reframe this to go and achieve and put my mark on something else, maybe within the sports industry, maybe outside the sports industry? It's a very personal thing. It's very easy for the red mist to come down and that initial reaction of, you know, why me? Why am I in this position? But the realities are that when it comes to being accountable, it is you, and it is how you respond. And I think that, you know, we talk about high performance sport. I think the ability to frame failure and put your hand up and be accountable for regardless of how it comes around is a huge trait of being a high performance person. And we all know high performance people underpin high performance athletes.
That's the perfect definition. I'm going to put that on a poster somewhere and sell that for a lot of money. But no, seriously, it's there's a lot to pick about from that response. But as we were saying just before we clicked the record button, you just answered my next question then there. But I'm going to give you the opportunity to add to that. Is there anything players can do apart from looking at themselves in the mirror, apart from reframing, framing failure in a different way, looking at it as a positive rather than a negative? Is there something else that you would advocate, and the work that you do through your consultancy, without giving too many secrets away of how a player can go, right, I'm going to make myself accountable starting today?
So I think the first piece, which really sits alongside, to be accountable, you first have to be self-aware. And so I work with a lot of young people around developing your ability and perception of yourself. Not just how you feel about yourself and understanding where you might be letting yourself down a little bit or where you're going above and beyond, but the perception from an external audience in. You know, if I sat on a park bench today and I had 10 people walk past me with their dog who just looked at me for 30 seconds, what would they see? What would be that initial frame, that initial thought process of who I might be? I've done an exercise before with some coaches where very simply I've printed out some Premier League managers on a bit of paper and I've said, tell me, how do you think they are? You know, summarize how you think this person behaves, this, you know, and all those opinions are formulated probably on a 3-minute press conference or a post-match emotional at the end of a game, an emotional interview at the end of the game. That that snapshot has created this perception. And I think that players being aware of how they are perceived, how they perceive themselves, where they really understand their strengths, where they really understand where they can improve, really helps when it comes to accountability. Because then at the end of the day, when you're in control of yourself, you're in control of an outcome. And if you don't get the desired outcome that you want, you can look and reflect within. So reflection and self-awareness and a development of that to create some really robust understandings of what you are, what you stand for, what you want to go and achieve. And when that doesn't happen or does happen, you are kind of a greater understanding of why.
Yeah. Is that the same or different for staff within football, specifically academy football? Is it a case of where we need to look in the mirror? Do we need to be more self-aware and get a stronger insight into how we're perceived as individuals, as human beings in this very humanistic environment? Or is this something slightly different because we would tend to be a lot older, may or may not be wiser, but have a little bit more experience and maybe had that, I'm generalizing here, and more learnings along the way? Or is it a similar kind of strategy for us as academy staff to have a better self-awareness, to be able to be more accountable of the things that we do?
I think what I would say first and foremost, there are some phenomenal people that are working in academies and are tutoring young people in this country. And you'll know it firsthand with your player care work, Lee, is that you ask your football coaches what percentage of their week is football coaching versus what percentage of it is around trying to mould individuals and trying to understand the brilliant individual characteristics of people that are in squads and marrying up and growing, you know, the holistic development of a player. It's hugely time consuming, as it should be, because again, you're in a privileged position. I think when it comes to accountability in staff, you have to correlate it to the clarity of information being provided by the club and by the leadership group within clubs. Because the more clear an individual is on what is success within your role, the more tools you are given to ultimately be responsible for the outcomes, kind of good or bad. You know, if you fully understand the expectation that sits behind why you are employed, what success looks like, and on the flip side of it, what is underachievement, you are able to now frame your role within that. And I think a lot of football clubs, this is again only in my opinion, fall down on the communication might be very, very clear into the academy manager group from the leadership, i.e. here's the outcome for our academy. This is how we want our academy to be perceived. This is how we want our academy to operate under the club. But that doesn't necessarily get dripped down into the individual areas. So, you know, how does that now reflect on the player care, head of player care in the academy? How is the club's vision molded to the needs of our young people so that we have outcomes associated to the club, outcomes associated to our people and our players? I think that's a really clear area of development that can happen across the country. You know, the clearer your communication, the easier it is to understand the journey that you're going on and where you are on that journey. And all of this stuff has to occur in order for someone to feel that they can work in an environment where they can be accountable for their actions. Because if you don't have that clarity in your processes, how can someone say, hey, that's me, you know, this is something that I can hold my hands up to?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I could probably need to do another episode just on accountability there.
It's a great topic. I love it. Oh, I think it's really fascinating. And you can jump into the neuroscience behind those that are happy to almost, you know, be at the front of their shield, and those that hide behind someone else's shield. You know, it is in the world that we work in, I think it's a really undervalued topic. And a topic that could be explored in so much more detail to support the robustness of individuals and the comfortability of individuals to be able to do it in the football industry and in the high performance sports industry. If you had more individuals that were comfortable with accountability and responsibility, the outcomes that are going to be associated to player development, winning cultures, whatever, will just elevate, I believe.
I totally agree. And so, the next question is a very selfish one. I have to be very open, honest and transparent because I always use the term accountability and ownership very interchangeably, probably almost in the same sentence every time. So should I be doing that? Are they the same thing or are they different? If they're different, how are they different?
So I think they are slightly different. I think when you talk about ownership, I think ownership is more around kind of your personal development. So something that, you know, something around that you are directly affecting is going good, going bad. I take ownership over that.
Yeah.
I think ownership and responsibility become more hand in hand than responsibility and accountability. So I think ownership is me going, oh, do you know what? I didn't service my car this year. If my car breaks down, that's me. I've got to own that. That I had all the tools and the warning to do something about it. I didn't do something about it. Accountability, I think this is where now a third party influence now can come in. And I think that's where I'd maybe distinguish the two, is that it's particularly in sport, you know, being accountable in sport for a player not fulfilling their potential, for example, brings in multiple individuals and different stakeholders. But to be the one that still puts their hand up and says, you know, that could be on me, I think that is almost an elevated way of ownership. Do you understand what I mean by that? It's almost that little bit beyond ownership. That's how I kind of see it.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think you distinguish it very well there in terms of that. Yeah, you'll own that. I think that just those three words, I think for me, really clears those blurred lines between the two. I think, yeah, accountability, there's other variables probably most likely involved, where I think ownership, it's like, no, I've got to own that. That's on me. And I think that's where maybe we've come to a little bit of an answer of why maybe players and some staff maybe not as receptive to being accountable, because they probably think, well, hang on, they probably confuse the two and probably think, well, that's not on me. And it's like, well, you know, because ultimately it's not. We're all accountable, aren't we, as staff? And then as players, they probably don't want to be accountable because they think, well, hang on, there's 10 other players in this team who aren't really doing what they need to be doing. Therefore, we're not winning games. Therefore, you know, and we're talking not as a right way here, but they will then perceive that as them because they're not winning games, they're not developing, they're not progressing. And as you said at the beginning, if it's down to winning and losing, then you're playing a very a very bad game of poker or any gambling, because the numbers are stacked against you on that one. But that's great how you differentiated those two.
But let's not forget, you know, the biggest barrier for people becoming accountable is fear. And you will see this, there will still be individuals and there will still be an element within the sports industry that are governed and kind of led by fear. You know, when you work in an industry where, you know, especially in coaching roles, I think there's just over 6,000 full-time coaching roles within, you know, professional football in this country. It's a very small number in comparison to those that want to be able to work within the sector. And I think that, you know, I was very lucky working for a club where I was given the tools to be creative and innovative and think about things differently. But I also know that there are colleagues which, you know, one mistake almost leads to that opportunity taken away from them. And so, again, it's all very easy for me, you know, speaking on a podcast saying, well, you know, put your hand up when things don't go well and own those things that haven't gone well or gone wrong for you. But in order to do that, it's a much wider piece. You need to feel that, you know, you work in an environment where your mistake can be embraced and you feel that you don't have that fear behind doing it. And that is the biggest barrier, I think, to a lot of people, you know, being able to grow this trait.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And Fee. Yeah, that's another separate. There's a lot of spin-off podcast episodes coming off this one. Yeah. You know, fee's a another element to throw in this mix. And I suppose this just shows how difficult, how challenging it is, not just in football, in all sports. You've got all these different bits in this kind of melting pot, and it's sometimes it's ready to boil over, sometimes it's not even simmering, and yeah, those different analogies in that one. But it's it just shows you how challenging it is. But then ultimately that's why we all want to be involved in sport. And another service that, or another part of the services that you offer, and the work that you do, I know you're very passionate about goal setting, and this is probably not as selfish as the accountability versus ownership question, but I do often see stakeholders, organisations get this massively wrong. And around goal setting and targets, that could be, you know, put into being made accountable or taking ownership. You know, we can discuss that probably at a later date. But in your view, how is this best done? Because in my view, it's either too simplistic and there isn't a tangible thing. There isn't anything to make someone accountable for. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to play better. Yeah, I'm going to run more. Yeah, I'm going to do this. But then conversely, and opposingly, a lot of people probably go way to the other side and get too nitty gritty with it. And it really disengages the person you're trying to work with to set those goals, to set those targets. Is there a happy medium, or how do you do it? What's the best way, in your opinion, to be able to goal set and be able to achieve through that goal setting process?
Yeah, you're rightly the weird and wonderful world of kind of personal professional development that I love and now invest my time in ultimately falls back upon an individual's ability to understand the journey that they want to go on. And I think when it comes to goal setting, whether you're working with an individual or you're working with a sports organization, it takes two different approaches. So I think first, if you know, working with individuals, goal setting is a lot more linear. It doesn't mean it isn't complicated, but it's a lot more linear to get out and to understand and help develop that individual's journey. So I'm very much a believer of starting with the end in mind. So having an idea of what success is for you and understanding that, you know, this marker, this metric represents me achieving what I've set out to do. What people don't do enough of, and I think this is where goal setting then becomes irrelevant, is they will put fancy statements out, or they will put big bold bash, you know, big bold goals which they're difficult to achieve but nevertheless shouldn't be deterred from, but they forget now to create the roadmap that demonstrates across this long journey that usually an individual goes on, because you have to go through pain to achieve, you have to, but you also, on that journey of pain, you have to have validation. So you have to see, you know, this is how we're wired as humans, you have to see the efforts that you are putting in are having small successes. Those small successes over time are the ones that give you your overall outcome and hopefully your achievement of your goal. But too many people forget to own the little tiny hundreds and thousands of milestones that you can tick off on that journey and on the way that keep the motivation levels high, that mean that you keep grafting, it means that you sacrifice, it means that, you know, you're able to see physically that the efforts you are putting in are having some reward. For an individual, that's kind of easier because you can control your destiny a bit easier. In that process, if you do it in enough detail, you can identify where you're going to come up against some roadblocks. You can predict the challenges and the doors that are going to get shut in your face. And you can almost strategize what happens and create lots of parameters around what ifs. What if this happens? Well, this is how I'm going to respond. And because it's a personal thing when you're working with an individual, it's very easy to keep, or sorry, it's not easy, it's easier to keep those motivations in mind that mean that when setback occurs, you can get yourself back on a track because you've invested time in that process. A lot of working with individuals when it comes to goal setting is very much a psychological process, because it's getting it out of your head and into tangible, visible ways that you can see the journey in front of you. I've worked with individuals who, you know, they can tell me everything they want to do, But because they don't have the visuals to validate the journey, it's always, yeah, but I'll start that next week or I'll start that next season. It isn't that thing that's living and breathing and pushing you forward. So getting it out on paper, getting it up on the walls, that's why some of the best academies that I have seen are the ones which have really strong branding and messaging around organizational values and cultures, etc., that really connect and drive individuals to push themselves to be the best that they can be. Going into organizational goal setting, this is now where I believe it becomes a lot more complicated, because you're now bringing in multiple individuals into an organization's journey. Now, this for me has to start with very simple, understandable, measurable targets. What do you want your organization to be? How do you determine what success is? And how do you want your people to buy into what they're representing when they put that logo on their chest and represent your organization? Now, if that's something that can't be clear, can't be communicated clearly, if that can't be something which individuals within your organization buy into, then the likelihood of you achieving success in relation to your goal is quite slim. Now, you know, there's that acronym FIFO, you know, apologies here, but that kind of fit in or fuck off, right? But when it comes to organizational goal setting, you have to understand there will always be people that don't come on the journey with you. And that's a natural process of running an organization in any business. But you, what you are trying to do is trying to build a road of which you can get all your people on the same bus going to the same destination. And that's why, you know, organizations spend a hell of a lot of money on their executive boards in their leadership groups, because the ability to steer that bus and keep it on track, making sure the bus isn't stopping to let your good people off. Some people get off that bus, but you don't want it to be your high performers. Other people will get on the bus later on in the journey because they want to connect with you. So, you know, I've gone a little bit off tangent, but goal setting within an organization grows off into very, very a larger array of complications than individual goal setting. But nevertheless, you need to have it present in your life, you know, whether that's your direct goals associated to your role, or whether that is your personal development roadmap of where you would like to see yourself in the future. You know, for me, it's a trait of responsibility to yourself to have an idea of that. And again, it comes, we mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast, that is a maturity thing. I don't expect a 16-year-old to be able to produce the next 10 years in their head and get out on paper and write down every single little thing. But I think as you get older and you know, you develop through your career and you have a greater understanding of your personal values, what's important to you, it's easier to put that into practice, and it's easier to hold yourself, coming back to it, to own the ownership, is easier to own your journey and hold yourself accountable to it.
Love that link there of ownership and accountability in there. You've obviously done this before, I like that.
Yeah.
So talking of accountability and yours, and you obviously took ownership of your journey, your vision. I wanted to ask you, how hard and easy was it to leave the football world to pursue what I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, was an unknown landscape for you? Or maybe if you practice what you preach, you had your 10-year plan, so maybe it wasn't that unknown. But I suppose I ask this really in light of where we find ourselves at the moment in academy football, the retain release or the moving of players, transferring of players, you know, from a first team level as well. And how hard or how easy did you find that transition? And, you know, is there any kind of words of wisdom you want to pass on? I know it's slightly different, you know, it wasn't from a performance aspect, but, you know, it's still going to be massively challenging for you to go, oh, actually, the perceived dream job in football, I'm going to leave that for something that is still relatively unknown because it might not take off, but I'm going to change anyway. How easy or hard did you find that?
So I think I framed it a little bit differently in my mind, Lee, because I've not seen myself as leaving the football industry. I'm seeing myself through a different lens of impacting the football industry as well as the sports industry in a different manner. You know, I wouldn't be in a position or I wouldn't want to put myself in a position where I didn't feel I could still have an impact within the environments that I've grown up around. So for me, creating Sportswide Consultancy, it was me saying, hey, I'm parking my journey directly working within a club and that different environment to sample a new environment, which is going to give me some new experiences. You're quite right. I'd be quite hypocritical not practicing what I preach and, you know, working with people, talking around embracing fear, embracing the unknown. You know, some of the greatest outcomes are people that have taken an element of a leap of faith. It absolutely was. I mean, I decided to leave an organization and set up a new business within the space of a month of having our first child come along as well. So I completely closed the chapter and started a new business at probably the most stressful time that any you know person can go through, being a parent for the first time. But I knew that I always wanted to explore a landscape where I had to hold myself completely responsible for my own business. The motivations behind that are huge because, you know, you don't put yourself out there, you don't work, you don't engage people, you don't provide good services. Who's paying your bills at the end of the month? You have to look at yourself at the end. You know, if I take a couple of days off, I have to recognize I do that, but I need to know that there are repercussions to that, and am I comfortable with that? And sometimes that's yes, sometimes that's no. So I think the unknown is something I've always tried to embrace, because you never know what is around the door. And if you can have the mindset that, okay, when you do jump off that, you know, jump off that proverbial cliff, sometimes you're going to land in water, and sometimes you just got to brace for impact. And I think if you can go through life like that, what you tend or try and get out of it is that you know that whatever happens, you're going to go through a different set of experiences, right? And I'm a big believer that what you perceive as bad experience, good experience, is just general experience, right? So for me, I've always tried to live like that. So when it comes to the unknown of stepping off a cliff and saying, right, I'm going to chuck myself into this or into my business. Yes, I had a helping hand, that I've got a very strong network, and I'm very lucky to have been in roles where I've been engaging with people that I'm engaging with now through previous job roles and professions, and I've built up a network, which if you're going to go into the consultancy space, the biggest advice that I can give you is that you do need people that are going to champion you just as much as you try and champion yourself, because it is a saturated space and you have to find your niche in the market. But going back to what I was saying kind of around the unknown, if you can be excited about a new journey, if you can, and if it sits in with the career plan and your personal growth plan, then why fear it? I think a lot of people fear setting up their own business inside and outside of sport, because it is the how am I going to pay the mortgage at the end of the month? If you plan going into the transition, I wish I had a bit more planning time, if I'm being honest, but if you can plan where this sits on your journey, how your goals come into it, again, link it back to all the little mini milestones that you need to tick off to validate why you're making certain decisions. Running your own business, like I've done, can be a really exciting, lucrative thing for you, and a really enjoyable process where at the end of the day, you know, it's your baby. This is something that you take pride of. It's something that you own, and it's something that hopefully others can reap the benefit of. And that's an incredibly rewarding feeling, one that I've not had in this format working within a football club, but one that I'm very much enjoying now.
And speaking of enjoyment, what do you not miss the most about being directly involved? I know you're saying you're still involved in football, you're still involved in sport, you're doing it through a different lens, but what do you not miss about that weird and wonderful world of football? But conversely, what do you miss?
I'll start with what I miss. I miss the people. Working in football, there is no other environment like it that bonds and brings individuals together to create your second family. You go through hardship, you go through good times together. You see these people more than you do your family. You know, what not necessarily people don't realize, this is not a 9-to-5 job. You know, the more senior that you become in an organization, this consumes you. It's a 7-day-a-week thing. Football and sport doesn't sleep. But I do miss those interactions. I miss that office environment, that match day environment, the validating your work by seeing players being given contracts, seeing teams win game of football, to see other staff members occasionally leave your organisation to go into bigger and better roles for their own development. I miss that. I miss the culture of directly working within a football club. What I don't miss about football is a little bit in terms of what we've discussed here about the internal politics, and every so often you get the person that makes life a little bit difficult because they haven't held their hand up when something goes wrong. But I suppose the disappointment of when things don't go your way. You know, last season was an incredibly exciting season for the club that I worked at. And any other year, probably in the previous 26 years, that would have yielded promotion, but it didn't. And that's a really hard thing to get your head around when you've done everything you possibly can. You've outperformed in every area that you have done previously and historically, and it hasn't yielded the success that you're after. It comes back to seeing, you know, if you only see winning as winning, then it's difficult. But we all know in high performance sport, winning is the easiest form of validation to the work that is being produced at a football club and in a sports club. That's hard. So the direct emotion of being associated to a single organisation, I don't miss. I don't actually miss that, because that's quite a weight to carry on your shoulders, regardless if we work in the academy, in a boardroom, as a coach. You know, you do carry the good and the bad with you wherever you go.
Put perfectly, as again, and I suppose really the ultimate question is, and we'll come on to the final question, which is normally always quite the hardest for a lot of our guests, but penultimate one, any hints, tips, hacks, easy wins? It's, I was talking with a player the other day who described academy football as, well, I won't misquote him, it wasn't the whole of football, of academy football, it was part of it, but the key word was brutal, and I just thought, wow, yeah, at times it can be, not wanting to paint a negative pitch. Like you said, there's good and bad in everything, but it is dynamic, that I love about it. It is very hectic, no 2 days are the same, no 2 hours are the same either.
You're right.
But any, for players, staff, parents listen to this, any kind of easy wins, any hacks, any advice on how to survive what can be a brutal, dynamic, but a hectic world at times?
I think if you're looking for an easy win, I think you're setting yourself up to fail in this area straight away. I think if you are a parent, if you are a player, let's look at those two, for example. If you were given the opportunity to explore an academy environment, you are in an incredibly privileged position, but you have to go into the journey understanding the likelihood of the outcome associated to this. So setting yourself up to realize, hey, not with a negative mindset, but I'm going through this journey where I'm going to give my all to achieve, obviously, the desired outcome of becoming a professional footballer. But I recognize it's going to be incredibly difficult. It's not going to be given to me. I'll be given the tools. I'll be given the ingredients and the recipe, but I've got to put it together myself. And I think that starts with parents being really that communicates regularly and consistently to their young person that this journey is not just about your footballing journey, but the development of you. There is going to be some fantastic experiences had of that young person. You know, coaches will develop talent. Parents, they see obviously their child more, will elevate the learning and development of the person. And I think when you can merge both development of the person before the player, you get some really strong, strong outcomes. No easy hit, no quick and easy hacks. I just think you have to have a really strong understanding of what you're getting yourself into and all of the amazing outcomes that are going to be associated to your academy journey. Because there's nothing quite like being in this environment. It puts stress on the family, it does. Mm-hmm. It's a time commitment. It is a lifestyle. You'll know that, Lee. It is a lifestyle. But it's something which, seen the right way, can be such a rewarding process for parents and players.
Yeah, I was hoping for an easy win. You've disappointed me there. But
yeah.
you've been realistic, and that's all I can ask you to be. And that's all you've been over the last 50 or 60 minutes. And speaking of realism, the final question, what's your lasting message, rather, for our listeners? That can be about anything. It can be about accountability, ownership, goal setting, life, football, sport. The floor is yours. You leave this and end this episode how you see fit.
I suppose there'll be a couple of messages. I think the first one is never do yourself down and undersell yourself. You know, if there is something out there that you truly believe in trying to explore, truly believe in something and have a passion to achieve something, which at the moment is out of your reach, don't give up on that. You know, recognize it does take a lot of work. It does take pain. It takes failure. But ultimately, if you're true to yourself and you are consistent in your approach and you understand the journey that you're going on, you will be successful. Don't get put off by that long journey, because sometimes, I mean, you know, it's that phrase out there, isn't it? Sometimes the journey is more satisfying than the end, than the destination. Embrace that journey that you're going to go on, because it's going to be messy, whether it's in sport, business, whatever industry that you're in, or whatever personal goals that you might have. The journey is just as rewarding as the destination, because on that journey you learn about yourself, you learn about other things, you learn about other people, you upskill yourself. You know, when you achieve something at the end, it's because you are now a greater, holistically rounded individual that has a greater awareness and understanding of the world around you, connected to what you want to achieve. I think in this day and age, more than ever, you have to go and get stuff yourself. You know, you can't rely on others doing it for you. It comes back to that, you know, ownership message. It's that if you truly want something, then you have got to make sure that everyone around you, and more importantly, you hold yourself to those values, and go and get it. No one else is going to do it. Go and get it yourself.
Love that. And there's a slight pause. I'm still writing that down. And while I say writing messages down and keynotes, you've actually brought the Development Locker record, 3 pages of notes. Normally it's 1 or 2. So plenty for me. It's not about me. It's about our listeners, you know, those academy players and young professionals who are on that journey, who are on those ups and downs. And you have given them plenty to think about, plenty to take away. Hopefully not too much. Hopefully they'll just take one aspect of it and really work on that, and return to the episode at a later date and pick another one and work on that one. And if they do that, I'm sure they will be a success, not necessarily winning all the time, because there's also that, devil in losing. In terms of what you just provided over the last 60 minutes, Jack, it's been superb. It's been a pleasure to spend that time with you. Thank you on behalf of myself, but most importantly, thank you on behalf of our listeners. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome, Lee. It's been like therapy for me as well. It's been nice to chat with you.
I'm not going to lie. There is way too much in this episode to possibly summarise here, but I'm going to give it a go. These are just 3 standout points from the last 60 minutes or so. Be careful how you view success. As Jack said, if success is your only goal, there are only a few of us who will ever achieve this. Therefore, the rest of us are losers, right? There can only be 10 to 15, maybe 20 players in an age group. Only 5 to 10 achieve apprenticeship level. Even fewer earn professional contracts. How many of them even get a follow-up professional contract? And at what level? And what level is success? I could go on. Success is about deciding what that looks like for you. And failure? Well, that all depends how you frame it. Is it all bad? Or is it simply part of the journey? Was it an opportunity that you've benefited from? Not necessarily a short-term one, maybe long-term. Have you become a better person for it? What was the worst that came out of it? All valid questions, and only you have the answer. Similar to only you determine what real success is. Mentors can help you along this journey to determining success or framing failure.
an untapped resource in the world of development, personal and not just from a performance aspect. This doesn't need to be someone who costs hundreds of pounds. It can be a teammate, a friend, a family member, just as long as they keep you accountable and listen. It can be done in small groups, reciprocating the offer to listen and provide advice, guidance, or solutions to someone else in return. I think that's it. I could go on, but I won't. But we will see you next week for another interview from the locker. Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and we hope you have taken many key messages away with you. But the next part is down to you now, by putting these into action. If you'd like today's episode, feel free to tell us on our various social media platforms, where you can find us at @thelocker_UK. For guest recommendations, future topics to be discussed, or you simply want to reach out, you can do so by emailing us on thedevelopmentlocker@gmail.co.uk. Remember to share this episode and our platform with your teammates, friends in football, or anyone you feel would benefit from it. So, what are you waiting for? But you're not done yet, as we look forward to seeing you next week when we bring you another interview from the locker.